brief recap when we last left our heroes. So we discussed the basic facts on the ground of the opinion of the Rambam, which we will hope to get back to and address some of the major issues and questions. But the opinion of the Rambam is the champion of the camp that holds that Olam Haba is only for your neshama, is only for your soul. The truth is that in the Rambam's terminology, what we refer to the neshama, the Rambam refers to as the nefesh. But that Olam Haba is only for the nefesh, and is not, there is no body, no physicality in Olam Haba. And Tchiyas HaMesim is some point before, well, not necessarily, some point that is not Olam Haba. Tchiyas HaMesim is not the entrance point of Olam Haba. Tchiyas HaMesim is a point where the body, the soul comes back to the body, you live again, and then you die again, and then you go back to Olam Haba. That was the basic nutshell summary of the opinion of the Rambam, which we hope to get back to. Then, last week, we discussed the opinion of the Ramban, which is generally acknowledged as what we would, I guess, funny to discuss, you know, a conclusion in these kinds of things, but it's the generally accepted opinion, certainly the majority opinion of the Rishonim, the opinion of the Ramban, that Olam Haba is for both your body and your soul, and therefore Tchiyas HaMesim is the point at which, after a person has died, so they're in a place which is referred to differently in different places, but we'll call it the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of souls, is kind of like a holding ground for the soul until such time we come back to the body, and we'll discuss that more next week when we go through the piece in Daf Sunos that I was mentioning before, about exactly how all those things work. But when the person dies, they go to a place which is not Olam Haba, and then they come back at the time of Tchiyas HaMesim. Those who are Zocha to it, those who are no longer alive and who are Zocha to go to Olam Haba, will come back to life, come back to their body, and then there will be some process that we'll discuss more next week, but through which the body and the soul then jointly enter a stage of existence of Olam Haba. And Olam Haba, the Ramban says, is a state of existence which does not exist now. It is the world to come, because it does not as of yet exist, as opposed to the Rambam, who says that Olam Haba just means the next world, because it's after you live here, then you go there. It's not that it's going to, it's not that it doesn't exist now. But the Ramban says, no, that it's a world that's going to, it's a state of existence that is nowhere to be found right now. It doesn't exist right now. And that was the basic approach of the Ramban, that the fundamental point that Olam Haba is for both the body and the soul. And the Ramban acknowledged that the difficulty with, the big question on this whole idea is going to be, what is the purpose of a body in Olam Haba? Why should there be a body in Olam Haba? If Olam Haba, everyone's going to accept, is a spiritual reward, and it's Nanim Miziv Hashchina, so what does the body have to do with that? And the Ramban basically gave in the short answer that the body is an expression of some kind of spiritual intrinsic value of something represented in the body. And the Ramban basically, the way he said it, is that, you know, God didn't just arbitrarily throw together the human figure and end up with, you know, humans as they appear. They were designed with incredible intent, and there's purpose to the form of the existence of man, and therefore that the that there's some greater purpose in the actual structure of the physical body, which is more than just, you know, the biological processes which it performs. So what I wanted to discuss today is just one very significant ramification of the opinion of the Ramban, which is possibly why the Ramban would tell you that Tchiyas HaMeisim is one of the Ikari Emunah, right? According to the Ramban also, he refers to, the Rambam is the one who constructed the list, but the Ramban also refers to Tchiyas HaMeisim as an Ikar of Emunah. And according to the Ramban, so just on level one, the obvious significance of Tchiyas HaMeisim is, you know, that it's really is the passageway into Olam Haba, right? That's gives its obvious place of importance just because of that. But I just wanted to discuss another point, which is an important ramification of the opinion of the Ramban. So I wanted to start with a question, and then we'll just go through the last two sources in the source sheet, and then just going to a little ahead of time that this is going to be a little bit different than normal, just because I, over Shabbos, decided to change the direction the shiur is going, so less in the sources and maybe less concrete structure than our average class has. But we'll see a couple of sources at the beginning, then we'll try and discuss more conceptually the topic at hand. So the question I want to ask is, every morning when Corey wakes up, he says,
"Thank you for my soul."
He says, "Moda ani lefanecha, melachai v'kayam shechazarta bi nishmasi," that you put into me my soul. Right? You returned my soul to me. So let me ask you a question, Rabbi Corey. Are you your soul?
Yeah.
So then who's the me that your soul is being returned to, Rabbi Corey? So are you the body then? When you say me, you mean my body.
Well, it's like two parts of a whole.
It's like two parts of a whole, right? Similarly, we say in the morning also,
we say,
Elokai neshama shenasata bi tahorahi, right? The neshama that you put into me is tahorah, right? And you created it, and you're going to take it away, and you're going to give it back to me, right? So, again, there seems to be a me outside of the neshama that we can refer to the neshama in reference, with a reference point of me that is not the neshama. The neshama is taken from me, it's given back to me. I thank Hashem for returning my neshama to me. So, seemingly, the implication of this part of the liturgy is that I am not my neshama. Now, before we go any further, I do want to give the, I don't know what to call it, the disclaimer that this is not the opinion of the Zohar. The Zohar is explicit in a couple places that a person is a neshama, and the guf is just a lavush for the neshama. The Zohar says on the pasuk, it says, Al basar ha'adam. The pasuk says, Al basar ha'adam, on the flesh of the adam. And the Zohar says, Melamed she'ein ha'guf ha'adam, that it's the flesh on the adam, on the man. So there's the man, and the flesh is on the man, right? So you are not your flesh. The adam is not the flesh. You're your neshama, and the body is on you, right? That's the opinion of the Zohar. But many of the Mekubalim, very interestingly, it's a fascinating thing, many of the Mekubalim do not say that. Many of the Mekubalim explicitly disagree with this point. Many very heavy hitters in the camp of the Mekubalim actually differ with the Zohar, very unusual, on this point, and seemingly that's the indication, the implication of these tefillos is headed in this direction, that there's me, and then there's my neshama is something, it is something that's there, other than my neshama, there's me, right? So try and figure out exactly what that me is. So there's an interesting Gemara, the beginning, towards the beginning of Perek Chilek, 11th chapter of Sanhedrin. So if you look at the fourth to last page on the source sheet, fourth to last page and the third to last page, we have this Gemara. So, confusingly, we're starting on the left side page and then moving to the right side page, just because of how my stapling job worked out. But so the Gemara says like this. Last word on the line, by my little bracket towards the bottom of the page. Amar le Antoninus le Rebbe. Antoninus said to Rebbe. Antoninus was the Roman, whatever he was called. I don't remember exactly what he was called. But what?
Prefect.
Yeah, prefect, the guy. He was basically in charge of Yerushalayim, or of the region of Eretz Yisrael at the time. And he and Rebbe had actually a very close relationship. And so Antoninus, there's a lot of stories where Antoninus came to Rebbe, and actually Antoninus learned Torah from Rebbe, and Antoninus gave a lot of respect to Rebbe. But Antoninus said to Rebbe, Guf v'neshama, the body and the soul, yecholim lifter atman min adin. They could exempt themselves, they could get themselves off the hook from judgment. Ketzad, how? Guf omer, neshama chatas. The guf can say, the body can say, the neshama was the one who sinned. How can I prove it? Shemiyom shapir shemimeni, because from the day that the neshama left me, hareini mutal ke'aven domim, the keder. I'm sitting like an inanimate rock in a grave, right? I haven't done a single thing wrong. I've been perfect as an angel since the day the neshama left me. The neshama omeres, and the neshama says, guf chata. The guf, the body is the one that sinned. Shemiyom sheperashti mimenu, because from the day that I left the body, hareini poratas ba'avir ketzipor. I've been floating around in just like a bird. Basically, I've been I'm no longer connected to anything physical. I haven't done anything wrong since I left the body. Obviously, the body was the one that was doing things wrong. Amar lei. So Rebbe, in response to this, right, the obvious suggestion here being that therefore, you know, judgment is illogical. So Rebbe responded, "Emshol lacha mashal lema davar dome." I'll give you a mashal what this is like. Give you a parable. Lamelech basar v'dam. There is a king of flesh and blood. Shahaya lo pardes na'e. He had a very lovely field. I'm sorry, very lovely orchard. Vahaya lo. I'm sorry, don't turn the page, flip it over, right? You guys all went the wrong way, right way, I went the wrong way. Right? Shahaya lo paris nae. Nae. Vahaya lo bechuros naos. And it had in it these ripe figs. And he wanted to guard it. Hosher boshne shomrim. And he put two guards to watch over, to protect this orchard. Echad chiger. One of them was lame, was handicapped and could not walk. The echad suma, and one of them was blind. Amar lo chiger l'suma. So the lame one said to the blind one, "Bechuros naos ani roeh b'pardes." Said, "I see some really nice figs in this orchard." Ba v'harkiveni. Let me ride on you. The naviam la'achlam, and we'll get them and we'll eat them. Rachav chiger al gabe suma. So the lame one rode on the blind one, and so now the lame one was able to direct him where to go, and the blind one was able to carry him. The heviyum la'achlam, and they got them and they ate them. Layamim, a few days later, ba bala parties. The owner of the orchard was the king. The king came and he said, and he saw that they were gone. Amar lahen, he said to them, "Bechuros naos heichanein." He said, "Where did my lovely figs go?" Amar lo figer. The figer, the lame one, said, Quum yeshli raglaim or halich lehem. He said, I don't have legs to walk on. I couldn't have possibly done it. Amar lo summa. The summa said, the blind one said, Quum yeshli einayim liros. Do I have eyes to see? I couldn't see. I wouldn't be able to find my way to get them. I wouldn't have even known they were there. Ma asa. So what did he do? Hirkev chiger al gabi suba. So he put the lame one onto the blind one. Vidano samka achat, and he judged them together. And with one on top of the other, he judged them and then he punished them together. Afa Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, maybe neshama, the zorka beguf. He takes the neshama and he puts it back into the guf. Vidano sam ke'echad, and he judges them together. Shene'emar, as it says, Yikra ke'el shamayim me'al, ke'el arts, ladin amo. Yikra shamayim me'al, zu neshama. He will call to the shamayim above. That's the neshama. The hearts and to the earth you will call ladin imo, to judge with it. Zaguf. That's referring to the body, that it says that Hashem will call to Shemayim and to the land with it for judgment. Is referring to the Shemayim is referring to the spiritual half, and hearts is referring to the physical half. We'll take the spiritual part of man and the physical part of man, and he will put them together. And he will judge them together, right? That was Rebbe's response to Antoninus, was that it's true that the guf and the neshama are, you know, each individually incapable of doing anything, but when you put them together as a unit, they're able to do something, they're able to accomplish something, able to both to for the Averos and for Mitzvos, that once you put them together, that then the neshama and the guf together form a unit which is able to accomplish something. I'm going to go one step further, and we'll then try and get to the depth of this idea. On the next page we have one small snippet from Das Turos. This is in Simon Peivov of the Simanim that Rechaim Friedlander gave it. And he he's talking now about, in general, ideas of the neshama and the guf, and the two kinds of halves of a person that they represent, and the two parts, aspects of creation, and of the way God runs the world that they're parallel to. But so the seichel says to the neshama, Gam zos timtza ha-kabbalah im tedak dikduk amok al ha-binyin hazeh shel adam. That you will find something if something very deep, if you look deeply in the construction of a man. Ki hine milvan ha-demos shel ha-guf b'tavniso. Aside from the form of man in his, the way he's put together. Umilvan ha-neshama shabo b'tzura asher lo. And aside from the soul, aside from the neshama, with the form that it has, hine yesh davar echad nimtza mehischabrus shnehem. There is one more thing that comes to exist between the combination of the two. Hu ziv hapanim, and he says this is the glow of a person's face. Vetira shazehu amishdane achai min amis. And if you look, you will see that this is what distinguishes the living from the dead. You see a person's face, the dead person, pale and white, and a living person has a certain glow on the person's face. V'lo zu bilvad, and not only that, ki afilu hishtanas yishu v'neshama v'guf misra'ibo. Even the degree to which the neshama is settled in the guf, in the body, can be seen. Halo tiri, because look, you could see hachol upon a rose. When a person is sick, his face begins to dim. V'lo od, not only that, elashemach shevas halev nearest bo, you could see, to a certain extent, a person's innermost thoughts reflected on their face. Halo tiri, panam shachukos, panam zorfos, panam masbiros, that the face can be, you know, light, it can be angry, it can be, you can see these different emotions expressed on the face. Kulam adehem hemashel hamachshavos and istaros bikiros leiv. All of them are expressions, testimony of the thoughts that are concealed in the person's heart. Ve'ein haziv hazeh nimtza lo l'neshama b'pnei atzma. You do not find this ziv, this glow, this shine does not exist to the soul when it is by itself. Ki harei ziv shel gufu, because this glow is coming from the physical body. It's coming from the person's face. Ve'lo guf b'pnei atzma, you do not find this glow in the body alone. Ki ein laguf ziv zeh b'lo haneshama, because when a person's dead and there is no more neshama in the person, so you don't find this glow. So this glow emanates from the person's body. It's not something that comes, that is coming out of the neshama. It's something you see on the person's physical body, on their face. But it's not something which is sourced in their physical body, because when the neshama leaves, so then you don't find this anymore. It is something which is formed, or which rather is created, which is born from the combination, from the connection of the soul and the body together. So here the Ramchal is describing very clearly that on top of that, which there is the body and the soul, when they come together, you have more than just now a body and soul which happen to be smushed together. You have something new which is created. There's something more that is there. It doesn't come from either of them. This glow does not belong to the body. This glow does not belong to the soul. When they come together, suddenly you have something new which neither of them has on its own. And that is something which is created from the union, from the connection of the body to the soul. So, to try and put this together, and to discuss our original question, who am I? When I talk about ani, when I talk about me, so where in me is the me? Which part of me is my sense of identity? Where does that come from? So, we have in a person is composed of a number of different terminologies we can put to this idea, but there's a seichel and a guf, there's an intellect, and there's the body, and the intellect, you know, that comes from the neshama, right? The neshama corresponds to the intellect, the machshava, the capacity of thought. That part of a person is from the neshama, the higher part of a person, the highest part of a person. And then, on the other hand, you have the guf and the nefesh. Sources discuss that the part of the soul, which is what animates the body, the part of the soul that interacts with the body, that's the nefesh. Your person has the neshama and the nefesh. And you have two extremes. And if we get down to the bottom of it, the truth is that these two extremes, the neshama and the guf, they really cannot coexist. They really are polar opposites, and they are, by their very nature, they are diametrically opposed to each other. And the Ramchal discusses, both in Derech Hashem and in Das Tunos, the Ramchal discusses that that by the laws of, you know, metaphysics and spirituality, a human cannot exist, because the soul is the body. Physicality is anathema to the soul. But what God does is says that by divine decree, God puts the soul into the body and traps the soul in the body, or contains the soul within the body, is something that is done. It's not something that is just like, you know, you can put your orange juice into your cup and now the orange juice is in the cup. The soul, by definition, is repelled by the body, and vice versa. But God puts the two together. He fuses the two together through basically overriding the rules of metaphysics and spirituality, and he puts the two together. It takes a specific divine decree to create that union. That union is the synthesis of two opposites, which by their nature really do not go together, which by their nature really cannot coexist. And that's the same thing with the nefesh and the neshama. The nefesh and the neshama, as much as they're not those opposites like the guf and the neshama are, but the nefesh and the neshama, they represent these two extremes. On the one hand, the neshama is chelak elokam imal. It's purely spiritual. It's the loftiest creation that exists. The neshama, in many ways, is higher than angels, is loftier than angels. The neshama is a chelak elokam imal. It's, however, it's meant to be understood. The words literally mean it's a piece of God. There's no such thing as a piece of God. God is completely one. There are no pieces. But whatever, the message is clear that it's, you know, the neshama is sourced in the highest level of spiritual existence. And then you have the nefesh, which is the part of the spiritual side of person which interacts with the physical part. The nefesh is, in a certain sense, referred to as being animalistic. You know, animals also have a nefesh. The nefesh is that which turns the body from something inanimate into something animate. The nefesh is that which it utilizes, which allows the spiritual part of the person to use the physical kalim, the physical faculties of the person. You have these two opposite extremes, and the two really, by their nature, shouldn't have very much to do with each other. You have the fusion of these two opposites, and what happens when you have this fusion of these two opposites, they really can't exist just as a compound of the two, because the two, by definition, can't coexist. What happens is, there's formed something new. The chibur of the two, the point of the connection, forms something new, and that's what's referred to in our sources as the ruach. The ruach is what's formed by the union of the neshama and the nefesh, or what's formed by the union of the seichel and the guf, the intellect and the body, is this new entity called the ruach. And just try and understand exactly what this is. There's a person exists with three components to your existence in this world, in three realms. There's machshava, there's your thoughts, there's the realm of that which is completely divorced from any physical expression in this world. Then there's dibor, there's speech, and that's the capacity of man to communicate. And then there's maisa. And then there's action, those things which are purely a physical expression within this world. They may be a result of some thought or process like that, but they are in and of themselves just a physical expression. And these, you have these three components. The first, the neshama, is the source of machshava. The neshama is always is the that which is purely spiritual, removed from physicality, is the source of thought, which is thought in its most basic nature is totally undefined. Is not, you know, we kind of translate our thoughts into words, but thought in its most basic nature, you know, many times you'll have this experience when you have a thought and you want to tell it to someone else, you kind of fumble for the words until you've kind of shaped it and defined it enough that you can put it into the words to express it to someone else. But the thought was there, the same in your head. It might have not have been as organized as it was by the time you were able to communicate it, but the thought in your head was there just the same before you put it into the words, because the thought, when it's in your head, is really something which is more basic than words. It's something, it might be more undefined, but the thought then exists there in a purely conceptual state. And that's the role, the realm of the neshama. On the opposite extreme, you have the on the opposite extreme, you have the aspect of maisa. You have the realm of action, of acts that's done through your nefesh. That's the part that is purely a physical expression that you can do many times. when we do, when we act, it's as a result, an expression of a decision that happened in our head. But you could have an act which is done, you know, certainly someone sleeping, those acts done by, you know, an infant, they're not the execution of a thought process. An act, by definition, does not mean that it is something sikhli, that is something done as a result of an intellectual decision. Action by itself is just merely a physical act. And then you have the meeting point of the two, which is in a certain sense is the transition point of thought into expression, the way in which that which is purely in your head has means to be expressed out into the world, is that middle point of Dibor, is that middle point of of speech. And speech, we find this many times. This is an idea which is somewhat ubiquitous in Jewish thought, the idea that man is defined by speech. We find this in the most basic description of what man is, in the creation of man. If you look at the Psukim in Bereishis, it's very interesting. You look carefully at the Psukim. First it says that God formed man, formed a form from the earth, and then he breathed into it a neshama. And at that point, Vayehi ha'adam l'ruach memalala. Right? And that was at that point, when first there was this form, and there was the neshama, and he put the neshama into the form, and at that point he became an adam, was a nefesh chaya. Right? And Unklus there, on nefesh chaya, translates the words nefesh chaya as the ruach memalala. He's a ruach. The Adam is a ruach memalala. Memalala in Aramaic from the word mili or milel, right? Means speech. So vayhi Adam l'ruach memalala means that he became a ruach which with the capacity of speech, and that's what the defining point of man is this capacity of speech. The capacity of speech expresses that chibor, that connection of guf and seichel, of machshava and maisa, of thought and act, is expressed most acutely in speech. Speech is, just on the most basic point, speech is the way in which something which was only in your head is expressed into something which can be defined and put into form into the physical world. That's what speech is. I want to just read one piece. The Maharal in his drashos for Shabbos Shuvah. So he says this idea. He says Dibor ha'adam hu kol ha'adam, that the speech of man is the entirety of man. But that I want to just read very quickly, time purposes. This one piece here from the Maharal in Vuras Hashem. He goes through this. Different focus also in Nisiv Tshuva, but this is the Ramchal in Guros Hashem in chapter 28 is discussing. How did I get to this page? Because my bookmark, I have a different bookmark on it. This is not it either. I will find it though. Here we go. Chapter 28 of Guros Hashem is discussing here this idea. He's discussing, particularly he's discussing Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's talking about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was described in many ways to be, you know, the most perfect of people, to have all these different aspects of completion and perfection and shleimus. What's up with Moshe Rabbeinu that he was low ish devarim, that he had difficulty with speech, that he was an arel sfasayim? So why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu had specifically this defect, as we would call it, of being incapable of the highest level of speech? And the Maharal discusses, maybe we won't go through the whole thing inside just because I don't want to run out of time, but the Maharal discusses that the he discusses the Gemara in Nida, probably everyone's familiar with it. The Gemara says that when the person is in the womb, that there's an angel that's there that teaches him the entire Torah. And there's a candle over his head, and he's able to see from one side of the world to the other, and all kinds of things the Gemara describes. And the Gemara says that there's an angel that teaches him the entire Torah. And when he is born, the angel smacks him on his. It says he's. It's mark oso soto al piv. He slaps him on his mouth, and then he forgets the entire Torah. Right, that's what the Gemara says. And the Maharal discusses, there are some who say that's where the philtrum, this little indent above your mouth, under your nose comes from. It's kind of hard to accept, because first of all, you can see the philtrum is on ultrasounds before the baby is born. And primates have a philtrum, and non-Jews have a philtrum, and seemingly there's no angel teaching non-Jews the entire Torah in the womb. Primates certainly do not have an angel teaching them the entire Torah and then smacking them. So seemingly but either way, we'll see the way the Maharal explains this Gemara, the two have nothing to do with each other. The Maharal explains that when the neshama is alone by itself, it's when the fetus is inside the mother, the neshama is not inside the fetus. There's the fetus is in the mother, and the neshama is still an independent entity. And the neshama, as a result of being separate from the physical bounds of the body, is a totally sikhli, an entity which is able to know the entire Torah. When it says the angel teaches it the entire Torah, it doesn't mean that the angel is going through and, you know, giving shiur to the neshama every day. What the Maharal says that represents is that the neshama, as a natural result of the state of its existence, knows the entire Torah. When the person is born and the neshama is thrown into the body, as a result of becoming physical, a direct result, a direct totsah, consequence of that state of existence is that it becomes no longer entirely sikhli, no longer entirely spiritual, and as an automatic result of that, it forgets the entire Torah. The Maharal says, what does it mean when it says that the Malach slaps him on his mouth? He says that's the point at which a person, he says that's like the expression that we have in Chazal of makeh bepatish. The point at which you complete something is called the final blow, the final strike. The point at which something becomes complete, becomes finished, is referred to, you give it that last hit. And he says that's what's being referred to. The person is being completed there is when he's hit on his mouth. Why is he hit on his mouth? Why is that the way he's completed by hitting him on his mouth? That's because the capacity of speech, that's the completion of man. The point at which man becomes finished is the point at which the body and the soul come together, is the point at which the koach hadibur, the capacity of speech, comes into man. Just to get back to, not to leave everyone without answering the original question that the Maharal asked, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu, his soul was on such a lofty, high level that it did not completely slide into his body. It did not completely line up with his physicality. It's the lineup, it's that synthesis of the spiritual and the physical which allows the capacity of speech. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu, who was on this higher level, he didn't have that capacity of speech, not because of the deficiency of Moshe Rabbeinu, but because of the loftiness of his neshama, which did not completely align with the physical capacity. His soul was in such a lofty place, it couldn't completely line up with the neshama. Just to throw, getting in a tangent here, and we're almost out of time. Great time for tangents, but that the Maharal explains that's why we find in Sefer Dvarim, suddenly Moshe Rabbeinu has no problem giving, you know, a 300-page monologue. What happened to his difficulty with speech? Says the Maharal, that after Matan Torah, at the point at which the Torah was given, that level of spirituality was brought down into the world. Now the world was a place which could support the spirituality of a soul like Moshe's. And at that point, Moshe's soul so to speak, slid down into alignment with his body, and at that point, he was able to speak like anyone else, and therefore, he comes to save his body, and Moshe Rabbeinu has no problem with speeches. Getting off track here, the point that all I wanted to bring out of this is the idea that man is defined by this capacity of speech. And that's the combination of the body and the soul, the two together, they form a new entity which neither of them is capable on their own. And the Maharal discusses, and this I want to just read really quickly through, that he talks about this idea that as long as the body is still inside of the mother, he is not a Ruach Mamala. He does not become capable of the capacity of speech until he comes out. And the capacity of the speech is something which specifically comes between the two. And the Maharal writes, "Vezeki pola dibor al yedegov." The act of speaking is done through the mouth, right? The moving of the lips, the shape of your tongue, the position of your teeth, all of these things, that's where speech comes from. The efshar zeh b'lo neshama sichlis, but it's impossible without the intellect of the neshama. K'mo she'amarnu l'mala, ki atinok she'ein lo seichel einu medaber. A child, an infant, who does not have the development of the seichel, is incapable of speech. V'chein ha'behema, yesh lo klei adibor, v'ein badibor. An animal has all of the physical capacities of speech, but they don't speak. Ki a behema ain la neshama sichlis, because a behema does not have a neshama, an animal does not have a soul, and therefore does not have the capacity of intellect. Ubal lomer ki gemar tzurat shel adam zeh gemar malach or nasib gemar piv shebo koach adibri. The completion of man comes through the completion of the work of man. It comes through the completion of his mouth, which is where the capacity of speech is. And that's why he forgets the entire Torah, is the point at which the seichel comes into the guf, and he's no longer this completely intellectual entity. He's now a combination of the two. That's the point at which he has to start over and relearn it on his own. But what defines a man, what is Adam? Adam is the Ruach Memalala. Adam is the combination which only exists from between the body and the soul, which produces what we call the Ruach, this level of existence, which is not, it's not Neshama, and it's not Guf, it's a new entity, which is created by the unity of the two, and that's all the combination of physical and spiritual, which creates speech. It's the physical movements of the mouth. It cannot, the neshama by itself cannot speak. It doesn't have the physical capacity for speech. But the soul, the body on its own cannot speak. It doesn't have the intellect. It doesn't have the intellectual capacity for thought. It's only between the two that you have where man is, where speech comes from, and that's what defines man, is that capacity of speech. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Sani Dalam and Aleph, the Gemara there says that the angel which is appointed over the separation of the body from the soul, that angel's name is Duma. The word Duma means silence. Right? Like it says, by Yidom Aharon, that when Aharon's sons and Nadab and Abihu died, Aharon was silent. Says that Yoshua, when he was in his battle in Gibeon, so Yoshua said, Shemesh Dom, he told the son to be silent, to stop saying Achira, and therefore stand still. The word Duma, right, means silent. Like we say in Tehillim, Lohamesim Yahaluka, Veloho Yorde Duma, those who descend into silence. Silence is the mark of death. Because the point at which the neshama and the guf separate from each other, the point at which the body and the soul go their separate ways, is the point at which the person is no longer capable of speech. That's the point, that's the idea, that is the nekuda, which most acutely emphasizes that the person no longer exists. That there's no more person here, that the body still exists. Right? When a person dies, what happened? There's no more, the body's still here, the soul is still here. What's gone? What's left? What's left is, what is departed is the Adam. Adam ki yamos ba'ol, right? The buzzer is when an Adam dies, because what dies is the agam, is that identity that came from a union between the body and the soul. That's what departs at death, and that union, that entity, is expressed through speech, and that's why the loss of the capacity of speech is what most acutely expresses that the agam, that the person, is no longer here. The body's still here, the soul is still here. They're no longer together. That's the most acute expression of death, of that there's no longer an agam here. So, of course it makes perfect sense. At the time at which you are meant to get your reward, you are to go to Olam Haba and to get your Schar Nitzchi, your eternal reward, who is you? Who is you that has to be there in Olam Haba? It's not your neshama, and it's not your guf. It's your neshama and your guf together. So of course there has to be a Tchias HaMesim. In order to give Schar to you, you is only created by the union of the neshama and the guf together, and therefore the body and the soul have to be put back together, have to be returned together, in order to recreate the entity that only existed between the two of them, in order to be able to have the identity, the entity which performed the mitzvos and deserves to be rewarded, is only recreated by that reunion of the body and the soul, to recreate that identity which is you. And that's the moda ani lefanecha. There's the I am not just my soul. You return my soul to me, because once my soul comes back, now there's a me again. But it's only once I have the two of those together, those two components together, that's the I. The I is nothing. There's no part of you which you can point to. Where in me is the I? I'm not my hand, I'm not my head, but not only that, I'm not just my thoughts. Where is the I? The I is something which there's no one part of component of me that is my sense of identity. My sense of identity only comes from something which is impossible to pin down, this impossible union of two opposite entities coming together and creating something new. That's where the identity comes from. We're not going to be able to get through everything I wanted to get to. I was going to talk about, just to give everyone the highlights that we're of what we're not going to get to, of how this fits into Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, where they fit into those three components. Yaakov is the third component, is also always associated with speech. Hakol Kol Yaakov. And Yaakov is associated with Ruach. It says, Vatechi Ruach Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu was that aspect. I'm not going to be able to get to the significance of that. And that also we have the idea, famous idea, many of you probably heard the words before, Chachma, Bina, and Das. We have Chachma and Bina, and Das. Das means a union of the two. That's why a union of two things coming together by Yeda Adam Eschava. The act of Adam and Chava coming together was called by Yeda Adam as Chava. Adam knew, he had Da'as of Chava, that's a Chibor, and that's the we're not going to be able to get to the significance of all those things. Maybe next week at the beginning, maybe I'll try and race through that before we get to next week's topic. But the point I'm trying to get to, just that the central significance of Tchias HaMesim is because there's only a you once there's Tchias HaMesim. All right, stop here.